This is the State of Things, broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. Sherry Holmes grew up immersed in the arts. Her father says before she was 8 years old, she'd been to almost every museum in the Washington, D.C. area. Sherry now brings that passion to North Carolina, where she founded the Triangle Friends of African American Arts. It's an organization that works to expand awareness and support of African and African American arts, from theater to film, music, and dance. And this Sunday, the organization brings together seven performing arts organizations to preview theatrical events staged in the Triangle this year. In just a moment, I'm going to talk with Sherry about her passion for the arts, but first a sample of this weekend show, and for that I will introduce playwright Adrian Earl Pender, whose new production, N, is part of this weekend's preview event. Adrian, welcome back. Good to have you here.
Nice to be here, Frank.
Tell us about your play. It examines a piece of forgotten history surrounding the as-yet-unknown playwright Eugene O'Neill, right, and an actor Charles S. Gilpin.
Well, O'Neill was known critically before that point. He had some critical success, and he'd won a Pulitzer Prize by that point. But he wasn't well-known nationally, and his writing and production of The Emperor Jones is what propelled him to the forefront of American theater. The Emperor Jones was produced in 1920 by the Provincetown Players, and it was the first play on the New York stage to star an African-American in a role for an African-American written by a white playwright. So in a sense, Charles was the Jackie Robinson of theater.
Groundbreaking play, because really it's 1920, so up until now, African-Americans had been represented in blackface.
Absolutely.
On the stage. I mean, this is the threshold. This is the moment that we're in. Eugene O'Neill writes his play, The Emperor Jones, and it's a breakthrough moment. But the focus of your play is on the word that that Charles S. Gilpin refused to say.
Yes. The Emperor Jones has several instances of the N-word in the play, and Charles refused to say it. And he would change O'Neill's dialogue to say other racial epithets, but he wouldn't say that word. That word was, there was too much hatred around that word, and he just, in principle, refused to say it. Mm-hmm. And that was the core of his issues with O'Neill, and their relationship started off respectfully, but after a certain period of time and Charles's consistent changes of dialogue, O'Neill finally had enough, because he was the master and no one changed his words.
Right. And for his part, O'Neill said, look, this is part of the dialogue. I've earned it. That it is earned. And he used many other epithets. So that's where we're going with O'Neill's argument. But the point is, now Gilpin is off the project and becomes persona non grata in the mind of Eugene O'Neill, whose star is rising.
Yes.
And for Gilpin, he was going the other way as a
yes.
result.
Within the decade of The Emperor Jones opening, O'Neill had won a second Pulitzer and was the greatest playwright in America. And Charles died penniless and broke and forgotten to history. And his friends had to put together money for a headstone for his grave, because there was no money.
So tell us about your play.
So N is about the time period of when Charles is first hired for the production of The Emperor Jones to right after O'Neill fires him. So it covers a five-year period when they started off as friends, and the deterioration of their relationship through ego from both men. They were both larger-than-life personalities. The arrogance of both of them in confidence in their talent, I suppose, made them both arrogant, as to Charles saying, I can change it if I want to, and I'm an actor, can do what they want. We create this part. You just write it. To O'Neill saying, what do you mean? I created the role on paper. I know, I'm omniscient. I know everything about this character. So that fight and their ego, and they were both notorious drinkers. They were both hardcore, heavy, legendary drinkers. And so you throw all that into the pot and you get...
And how did you get interested in the story, and why did you decide that you would take this on as a project for yourself?
Well, I'm related to Charles on my father's side of the family. So my father's first cousin, Jackie Gilpin, is Charles's granddaughter. Charles died in 1930, so she wasn't born when he was alive, and there's no one in my family now who was alive when Charles was. But there are some family memorabilia and artifacts that they have. And so I heard the story. I didn't grow up hearing the story, but I heard about it in the mid-90s and just kind of filed it away, because I wasn't a writer at that point. And so I thought it was interesting, but I didn't have much to do with it. And then about 2 years ago, he just popped into my head, and I said, now's the time.
You were a writer. You just hadn't written anything.
Oh, well, yes.
Yes, Sharon, sir. Tell me about this, because this story is extraordinary. I mean, if you think about this, two great artists. So this is about art. It's also about racial politics. It's about appropriation. Can Eugene O'Neill even dare to sort of create an African-American character? Well, that's not the question at the moment. And then the language he uses. So many of the important cultural and political cross-currents run through a play like that. But I think it highlights the importance of your project, which is to bring attention to African and African-American arts in the Triangle and in North Carolina. Tell us about that project and why it's interesting to you.
Well, one of the things that we do with the Triangle Friends Group is Friends of African-American Arts, is we promote the arts and we let people know what's going on in the community. So we go and attend performances as a group. So we host special events, and we have a website. So if somebody wants to know what's going on in the community, they can check it. And so when I was working on the website and just putting all the information about the performances that were going on in the theater this year for the 2016-2017 season, the list kept getting longer and longer. And this season, there are actually 17 African-American plays and musicals, as well as an African-American opera. And I thought that was something that was so special and so unique that we really needed to celebrate it and to honor it and to make sure that people knew about it. And I felt that this would be a great way to do that.
Is there a way that framing and bringing attention to the African-American art scene is different? Do you have to do anything different in terms of promotion, publication?
Yeah, you do. And that's pretty much how this organization came to be, because a lot of the traditional ways of marketing the arts don't reach our community. And so, but when people know about it, people will come. You know, just as someone will buy tickets, an expensive ticket to go see Beyonce, you know, we brought 50 people to see a play at NC State. So people will come. But all of those people that I brought were like, I didn't know about this performance. Mm. And so the things that we do is, like I said, we do social media, but we also go to different festivals and special events. Like, we're going to be at the African American Cultural Celebration. We're going to have a table and we're going to be talking to people. And that's why we have the special events, because it's like we are all going to the performance on this particular day. We brought 20 people to the opera who probably had either not been there. Some had been there before and appreciated, but a lot of people had not. And so sometimes you have to take somebody by the hand and bring them. And then when they go and they have that amazing experience, then they appreciate just how special and wonderful it is.
Well, Adrian, getting back to your play, it's an evening of great storytelling to begin with. But also, not only did you maybe not know that you love plays, but the story behind this is something that is then revealed to the entire audience. And many of us, I certainly didn't know this story until I prepared for this interview.
Many people don't know about Charles. He's a forgotten segment of theater history. And hopefully this play will help bring him back.
Well, joining me now are two actors who we are bringing to the stage, Chris Helton, but only the radio stage. They bring themselves to the live stage a little later on. Chris Helton and Philip Bernard Smith play two of the central characters in the show The Whipping Man that's currently on stage at the Raleigh Little Theater. Chris and Philip, welcome to the State of Things. Good to have you here.
Thank you. Thank
Glad
you.
To be here.
Thank you.
Chris, this production is set. Tell us a little bit about the production itself. Set on Passover in 1865, the Civil War has just ended. Tell us more about the premise.
Yes. So the play by Matthew Lopez takes place in April of 1865. The Civil War has just ended within the last few days. It is on the eve of Passover. And you essentially were in Richmond, Virginia. And at the beginning of the play, you meet three characters. You meet Caleb, who is a white Confederate soldier who is returning home from the war effort. He was raised Jewish. You also meet Simon, who's the older of the two newly freed slaves. And then you meet myself, John. And essentially, at the beginning of the play, you're meeting these three characters who are coming home from three uniquely different experiences that they've just taken place. And from there, inevitably begin to see their relationships and secrets are revealed and kind of get an understanding of how they're trying to take this destructed home and build into something new.
Tell us more about your character, John.
Well, I play John. He is the youngest of the two newly freed slaves. He's in his early 20s. And I don't want to reveal too much, but John's a really interesting character. I like to describe him in the sense that when we first meet him, he's been through a lot of given circumstances, and he's just trying to better the quality of his life. Now, how he might go about doing that is questionable, and if you come to see the show, you'll get to see why. But truly, he's a very dynamic character. He's a dreamer. He wants the best for himself. He has this new sense of freedom that he's just gained, and he's trying to figure out what that means and how he can quickly go from being a slave in this house to being a free man and what that means for him.
Philip, tell us about your character, Simon.
Simon is older. He is the head enslaved person from the DeLeon family. He has aged and he has wisdom. He's climbed the ladder, if you will, the only ladder that was permitted for enslaved people at that time. So he has a certain amount of status in the home. He practically has raised these two young men. And so his purpose is really getting things back to the way it was with the offering and the giving of being a free man.
And Judaism plays an important part in this. As you say, the owner's family, the one-time owner's family, is a Jewish family. And so Judaism plays a part then in the lives of the former slaves. Tell us about that.
Yes, he is a devout Jew. And that was very common for enslaved people at that time to adopt the religion of their slave masters. And so this is particularly important for Simon because it is parallel with the exodus of Jews from Egypt at this time. And so he sees that spiritual connection, and he is riding on the joy and the happiness of that, and it is elevated in this particular time of his life.
You have a scene prepared for us, and I wonder if one of you would like to set it up for us. Chris?
Absolutely. I'd be happy to set this up. So essentially at this point, the three characters, John, Simon, and Caleb, are sharing a meal for the first time. And really for the first time in the play, I believe, this is the first time we get all three of us together in this space for the first time. And at this point, really what's happening is Caleb has begun to lay in on me regarding why I was at home while he was at war. And essentially he's saying that, you know, while he was out fighting and for his country and for his home, I was at home doing nothing. And that kind of sparks a flame in me. And it just builds into this tension and this really heavy argument that takes place.
All right.
You ever read Leviticus? Then you'll remember this. Both thy bondman and thy bondmaid, which thou shalt have, shall be of the heathen that are round about you. Of them ye shall buy bondman and bondmaids. They are your possession, and ye shall take them for your children to inherit for themselves. But over your brethren, the children of Israel, ye shall not rule. Remember reading that? It certainly got me to thinking. Were we Jews or were we slaves? Were we the children of Israel or just the heathen round about you? Because we certainly couldn't be both. That was clear. And now you've just given up on praying just as easily as that. Because it was yours to discard if you wanted to. It was never ours. It was given to us, and it could be taken away with just some careful reading of Leviticus.
Is your faith that weak, John? Can't answer one question and it all falls apart?
How do you square it, Simon?
I can't. I can't square anything I don't understand. It ain't ours to square. That's why we're always asking, like you ask. You both ask your questions, and sometimes you get answers that you don't like. But you keep on asking. That's what a Jew is. We talk with God. We wrestle with him. Sometimes we even argue with him, but we never stop asking, looking, hoping for answers. You don't lose your faith by not getting answers. You lose your faith by not answering questions at all. That's who we are. This is our family.
This is not my family.
The only family you know.
Not by choice.
So who chooses their family? Now, whether you like it or not, we are a family.
How?
We share faith. And that faith was given to us by Caleb's family. A gift. Generations. Brought up together in this house in the faith of God. That is a family.
And how did that family treat us, Simon?
Better than most.
Not good enough.
You know all the other slaves around here. You know we had a world better than they did. coming here after your mother died was the best thing that could have happened to you. You could have been sold to a plantation. You could have been sold to a Christian home. You ever thought of that? You think they'd have let you been a Jew in a Christian home? You think they'd have let you been a Jew in any other home but this one? Boy, you don't know how lucky you are to come from this house. You'd have been nothing without it. Instead, you sitting up here quoting scriptures all on account of being brought up in this house.
Actors Chris Helton and Philip Bernard Smith doing a scene from the play The Whipping Man, currently on stage at Raleigh's Little Theater through January 29th. What a remarkable scene. And, you know, if you go back to Adrian's play as well, the complexity of what it means to be an American, the identities that are all living together in this house, brought up in this house. Philip, this is your second time in this production, and you've said the story feels different for you this time through.
Yes, that's one of the great things about good writers. The story always lives, and it grows and it stays consistent with the climate of society. And this time, 3 years later, it says something more. It says something more specific to our nation and our country and our attitudes about each other, our abilities to trust and love and care, and our humanity is in the scope of things.
What is it that it's saying to you now?
Well, it says we are a nation of immigrants. I mean, we came from all over the world. We're in an amalgamy of different types of thoughts and values and opinions. And to be here in this country, everyone has a stake in it. And sometimes we feel like our stake is more important than the other. Mm. But in the end, we're all trying to shape and form our future. And that is where we are right now.
Sherry, I guess this speaks to the importance of the arts in general, but in particular, looking at the arts from a particular frame of reference. We think that art should apply generally to all of us and tell stories that appeal to all of us. Of course, that's true. But there are individual and very precise and separate perceptions and frames of reference. And I just wonder what you think about the importance of promoting African-American arts in a place like North Carolina.
Well, it's important for people to have, as you talked about, and appreciate the experience of others. But there's also something for being able to say, to look up on the stage and see your experience reflected. There are a lot of things going on right now in the country, and you can feel neglected. And so when you look up and you see so many performing arts organizations, because of those plays, 17 plays, they're from multiple organizations, performing arts groups. So when you see that, where you look at the art museums and how many of them are honoring African-American art, that really helps you to appreciate the real story that's not being told. But it really uplifts you when you recognize and hear about how many different organizations and museums and places are appreciating our experience.
And as you say, that's going to be going on all year throughout the Triangle, and I guess all over North Carolina, but you're focusing on the Triangle. Give us a sense of what we're going to see at the preview this weekend.
Well, we're going to see multiple different scenes, but we're also going to have some fun as well. So it's not all going to be dramatic, even though it's wonderful having that experience. I mean, just even now hearing you guys a little bit, that's what it's about. It gets you excited. Don't you want to go and hear the rest of the play? But there's also going to be some songs. We're having someone from Smokey Joe's Cafe from Theater Raleigh who's going to come and sing. And then we also have somebody from Porgy and Bess who's going to come and sing. So you've got different mediums. You have playwrights, performers, and singers, actors and singers. So it's a pretty full evening.
Pretty full evening. We've got the details at our website, stateofthings.org. But I want to thank all of you for being here. Sherry Holmes, founder and director of Triangle Friends of African American Arts. Sherry, thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Adrian Earl Pender is a playwright whose new play, N, premieres at Theater in the Park in Raleigh in February. Adrian, thanks again.
Thank you, Frank.
And actors Chris Helton and Philip Bernard Smith in Raleigh Little Theater production of The Whipping Man on stage through January 29th. Thanks to both of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And as I say, all that is on our website, stateofthings.org. The African American Theater preview event happens Sunday, Raleigh Little Theater, 7:30. Stateofthings.org has it all. Coming up, a new novel that tells the story of a young woman living in the South during the Civil War. Stay tuned.